Welcome to the Coder Catch Up Podcast. My name's Jamie Jones, and today I thought we'd talk about workflows. This is something I'm kind of addicted to, a little bit OCD with, is my web development workflow. So working on various projects, I have workflows for doing so. Now, most of my work these days is Ruby on Rails, so a lot of it's going to revolve around that, but I still do a fair bit of WordPress and Drupal work, as well as the odd static site as well. So I thought I'd share my workflow. I think it's a pretty important thing to share. A lot of people don't share it. It's very interesting to see how other people work and what they do. So this is going to tie into a lot of the interviews that we've got scheduled to come up later in the month, which I should be having some out in February, early March. It's just finding time for everyone to, the times to match up so everyone can sit down and have a good chat. Now, with my workflow, I have a terminal-based workflow, and a lot of people kind of, at least these days, they're kind of like, oh, I'd like to use my visual tools. But personally, myself, I used to come from visual tool-based workflow, but now I use a terminal-based. It just feels a lot nicer being all in the one section. I'm not knocking it. I'm just saying that this is what I prefer. You might prefer something else. This is just what I feel more proficient in. So with my terminal-based workflow, I use iTerm 2, which is a Mac-based app. That's a terminal replacement. And I also use a bunch of .dot files. Now, .dot files are these files that live on your system, usually in your home folder, as a .dot, a hidden .dot file. So it's got .dot and then a name. So for example, with Vim, which is a text editor, there's a .dot vimrc file. And that has all my configuration and stuff. And I have all that hosted on GitHub. Any machine I come on, or if I reformat my machine, I just pull down the .dot files and install some software with some other stuff I've got there. And that basically my machine is ready to go. So this is the good thing about .dot files. I don't have to worry about copying tons of files up from certain folders or having to reinstall stuff manually. It's all kind of just there. I just pull them all down, boom, ready to go. Everything's the same. I could even, technically, I could log onto a server, pull down my .dot files and work on the server. It's another great thing about the terminal-based workflows. I can work on just about any Nix machine, so whether it's a Unix, Linux system, I can work on that. Now, I touched on Vim, so I switched to Vim when I first started working at Copyright, which is, I think, a couple years ago now. And I originally used Sublime Text, which is a fantastic editor. Highly recommend it to anyone. Now I'm probably swaying more towards Atom, which is brought out by GitHub. It's kind of like a clone of Sublime Text, but they've built on it. They've made it their own. And it's all JS-based. It's pretty awesome. I believe it's made in Node. But anyway, I've switched to Vim, and I've found the speed improvements as well as saving your fingers. Ben Orenstein has a great talk about Vim and being productive and stuff like that. And you know, we type a lot of code every day. So most web developers or designers will be typing a lot of code, whether it's front end, back end, whatever. And Vim kind of has this way of working. Like, it's, you have to really get into it. Basically, there's like single keys for doing certain things. So like going into certain modes and stuff. I recommend checking it out. There's if you open up your terminal, if you're on Mac OS X or if you're on Linux, and type in Vim Tutor, because Vim should be installed, and it'll actually run you through how to use Vim. And I think it only takes 20 minutes, half an hour or something, and you get a fair way involved with Vim and learn quite a lot. And it's not as scary as you think. I did notice when switching, though, it took me probably about 3 or 4 weeks to really get back up to speed to where I was before. But after that, I couldn't think of going back. Like, whenever I go to Atom, for example, I don't have the Vim mode on Atom set up. I feel really slow and all over the place. So Vim's been really good. I did use Janus, which is a distribution of Vim, or kind of like a bunch of plugins on top. That makes it an easier transition. Gives you all the features that you want, because Vim's kind of like Drupal. So for example, it's out of the box, it's plain, it will do what you need to do, but it's kind of shape it how you want it, kind of thing. So Janus kind of helped there. I've switched back to plain old Vim. I did inherit some stuff from Janus, some of the functions, but basically it's just plain old Vim that I use now. And another big thing, which is a huge game changer for me, was Tmux. So the terminals have a thing called a multiplexer. You can install these. There's a really old one. I think it was made in the 80s or something. I think 80s. Called Screen. And basically it creates like a client-server setup. So you create a server that might be running multiple windows. And you can disconnect and reconnect from that any time. So the benefits of this, like say you have to do a long-running task on a server, you would boot up Screen, start doing your task, and say your internet dropped out. Normally, when that dropped out, you've lost everything. You'll have to rerun a command and might half complete it or something like that. With Screen, and now Tmux, which is kind of like the successor to Screen, if that connection is severed or whatever, you can actually rejoin it and it'll still be running because it's running in its own little server. The other good thing is you can do like panes and tabs. So basically you can have like a virtual terminal that has multiple panes. You can split them all up on your screen or tabs. So it's kind of like having tab, like your browser in a terminal. So that's pretty cool. The other thing that I use to complement that is Tmuxinator, which is a Ruby gem. And basically it creates these configuration files for your Tmux sessions. Now what that does is I can go, okay, I want to have X panes, I want this all to run, and all I have to do is do mux, and then the name of my session, and it will load up that configuration file and set up everything. So all my split panes, all my tabs, it'll also run things, so I get it automatically for a Rails project, for example, get it to open up a shell for me, I'll open up Vim in the project directory, it will run the Rails server, it will make sure Git's up to date, it will do all these kind of things just with one little command. The other thing is pairing. So you can actually have someone SSH into your machine and connect to that session, and then it's a real time. So exactly like a chat. So you can have like a main session set up on your machine and anyone can connect to it, or you can restrict who can connect to it. And that allows pairing to be really easy. And it doesn't matter about your internet connection too much because it's super simple. It's just text going across the wire. So I've been using that a fair bit for pairing. We have done a fair bit with Screen Hero, which has just been acquired by Slack. Sometimes we just find we need the visual aspect, but if it's just purely code, then Tmux pairing sessions are amazing. They've got teammate.io, and I think there's a couple others like Wemux, which allow you to easily pair. So it's a little bit tricky if you're doing it manually, but if you use something like Tmate, it's super simple. You just run Tmate and a name, and it'll give you a special SSH URL, and it's only active for as long as the session is active. You can give it to a friend or multiple friends, and they can come in and code with you. Now, with all my projects, I used to have a function that kind of set up folders and stuff, but I found that because I was switching between different projects quite a lot, that it's easy just to do this manually. So what I do is I create a README file, set up a Git repository, then I either host that on GitHub, it's primarily GitHub, or I have my own hosted GitLab instance, which is like an open source GitHub. I usually use that for archives because once you start getting a lot of projects, GitHub gets quite expensive. It's awesome, but if you are freelancing or something like that, and you might have 20, 30 clients, that monthly bill does add up quite a lot. So I get all those set up in my readmes and make sure I specify anything like environments and languages are required and anything like that. Now for my projects, I'll cover WordPress first, because that's a simple one. All I do is I just download WordPress. I used to have a little command in the terminal to do that, but now I just go and grab it from wordpress.org and just have a look at any updates and things that have been happening at the same time. And then I use the underscores.me, which is underscores is like a base theme. Now, it's not something you create a child theme off. It's purely you download it and then you customize it to suit your needs. It's kind of like a best practices theme out of the box. There are some other things I use, like the WordPress theme checker and stuff like that, just to make sure I'm keeping up to date with the APIs, because they do change. They don't change massively, but just enough sometimes. For my Drupal workflows, I exclusively use Drush, which is a command line interface, a CLI tool for Drupal, which allows you to install Drupal, reinstall Drupal, enable modules, download modules, clear caches, all that kind of stuff. But if you're a Drupal developer and not using Drush, you're doing yourself a massive disservice. So if you are using Drupal, get Drush. That's it. For static sites, I used to usually use Middleman or Jekyll, just because they've got a lot of handy stuff. They are all Ruby-based, so you do need Ruby on your system. But I've been playing around with Proteus, which is by Thoughtbot. It kind of bundles them in all into one, so you just run a command like Proteus new. You can say, I want a middleman, so you Proteus new middleman, and then name your project. And it'll kind of set up everything and add some stuff in and make it really, really easy and allow you to, like, give you a command like Proteus setup, which will set up the project. You've got Proteus server, which will run a little web server for you, and you can view your project there. And you can also Proteus deploy, which will put your static site up on GitHub, which you can host for free. Ruby on Rails. So I used to just use the normal Rails command from the Rails gem, which is Rails new, whatever. I do have a dot file that has custom settings that sets my database up to Postgres by default and to not use the normal mini test testing framework. But I do pretty much nearly every project I use Rails Composer. Now I've created a little function in my terminal configuration that allows me to choose between the generic Rails or the Rails Composer. Basically, Rails Composer is kind of like a wizard. So you do, I've got it changed to be RA, which stands for the little function that runs my Rails Composer. But basically, it just tells Rails to use a specific template, which Rails Composer has up online on GitHub. And it goes through and asks you a bunch of questions like, oh, do you want to use Bootstrap? Or what do you want to use for your development server, your production server? A lot of best practice gems, do you want to install them and stuff like that? It's awesome. I really highly recommend it. It really bootstraps your Rails project and gets a lot of the things you normally put on there up and running straight away. But that's basically it. Combining those projects with Tmux and Vim, I've got everything I needed all sorted in the terminal and generally get those projects up and running. It's one command. Now for the front end, it does vary. Primarily, most of the time, it's Bootstrap. So Bootstrap came from Twitter originally and it's become its own little project. Fantastic front end framework. Everything you need to do, it's got it. So you've got a less version, a SAS version. Does all your grid. It's got slideshows, got all your JavaScript stuff, forms, modals, etc. There's also Foundation, which I used to use primarily, but I've switched to Bootstrap. It's also fantastic. Doesn't have a less port. It's all SAS based. It's pretty awesome though. The guys at Zurb developed that, and also I've got a contribution to it, which I'm pretty happy about. Something simple, but it's always good to give back. It's just a fantastic front end framework. They're kind of pushing the limits there of what they can do out of a framework. So they've got Foundation for Sites, which I think it's called now. It used to be just Foundation, and they also have Foundation for Apps, which is like a Flexbox based grid system. So check that one out too. Then I said in a previous episode about, you know, going outside and doing something a bit different from the normal path. Thoughtbot has its own little bunch of, it's not a single project, but it's multiple projects, and you could use them with Bootstrap and Foundation. They've got Bourbon, Neat, Bitters, and Refills. Now, Refills is kind of like a collection of components, so navigation bars, pricing tables, stuff like that. Bitters is adding nice styles and stuff like that out of the box. Bourbon's like your mix-in library, so it gives you all these SAS functions. This is all SAS-based. Then Neat's like a grid framework that it has. Bourbon does have its own grid framework, but Neat's kind of like a better version of the grid framework. Then we get on to testing now. I think this is pretty important. I probably should do this throughout the project, but I generally just do it at the very end, is browser testing. And I use Browser Stack for that. I used to use virtual machines, but it just chewed up the RAM on your machine. and it was frustrating having to then have multiple versions of VMs to test different versions of, like, say, IE and XP or IE in Windows 7 and IE Windows 8, and it was just a punish. So, you know, I still think it's $20 a month for what I need for browser stack, and it's really quick now. Like, in Australia, it used to be really crappy for us because our internet sucks. That's just how it is. But it's good now. It's pretty good. It's not really lagging. And then there's Litmus, which we use for testing EDM, so your newsletters and any kind of general emails. And then for hosting, we used to do, and I used to do, like, shared kind of hosting. Like, I'd set up a server and then I'd resell on from that. And then you can't, I like the idea of the money that you get from it, but at the same time, it's a bit of a pain to deal with. So now I pretty much use DigitalOcean for 99% of everything. It's affordable, it's super simple, there's lots of API integration as well to speed things up, and they're just awesome. Like, it's, I can't floor it. It's been a fantastic service. Occasionally do use AWS. I originally went off AWS simply because the pricing was pretty expensive back in the early days, but now it's comparable with DigitalOcean. But I still find DigitalOcean is just a nicer experience, at least for the size of the apps and websites that I do. Probably when you start to get to your more production, you know, hardcore stuff, I'd definitely go AWS hands down. Now, to deploy those, a lot of the projects, because I'm in Ruby and we do all the testing with that, I use a CI system. I use CodeShip. If you're looking at CI systems, CodeShip's the simplest to implement. User interface is lovely, and through that you can deploy to Heroku, your own servers or whatever. And I use Capistrano strictly with that. So Capistrano does my actual deployment. So basically what happens there is we have it. So you commit to master, or you pull into master or whatever, it then pings CodeShip, or CodeShip has a look and goes, okay, I'm going to run a test, runs the tests, everything passes, it then deploys it with Capistrano. So that kind of keeps everything hands off, and it'll, you know, as long as master is clean and all good, then it will deploy. So that's kind of the workflow there. Now, for little stuff, I do use CodePen. It's by Chris Coyer and a few other guys. It's basically like JS Bin, a few of those others, but a lot better. Like, I prefer it. Excuse me. And it's awesome. Like, if you are not using it, it's free. There is also paid versions. I recommend that you support them and sign up. It's pretty cheap. But it allows you to basically do all your front-end work online. Some people do use it strictly as their editor. It's got a really nice interface. It's simple to work. It's got, if you get the paid plans, let me have a look. Where's my plans? Okay, because with your plans here, you can do like a professor mode and all this kind of stuff where you can demo and show people and have people work with you and all that kind of stuff. And that's pretty awesome. It's worth the money in itself. Like, I'm paying, I think it was $9 a month. And that gives me live view, so auto-updating previews. Asset hosting, like, so you can upload your own images and JavaScript files and stuff like that. Even though you can put your own JS in there, you might want to add other stuff. Got collab mode, so I can pair program with someone. So, for example, where this comes in real handy is, so I've got a friend who's having a problem with something on the front end. I can copy some code in, and I can show him how to do that there live, and then he can play around and also show me, like, oh, will this work or that work? It's really, really, really nice. You can have your own blog. I don't know. I can't really see a good use for that, personally, but it's there. The professor mode is really, really cool. So basically it gives you a nice big view on the screen, so you get a customized view. You can live code. You get a special link that gets given out to your students or whoever's just viewing it, and and then they can follow along and have a look and stuff like that. And you get private pens. So this is a pretty big one. I think this is worth the money itself, is you can have your own private pen. So any kind of code you write can be written as a pen. That's what they call it. And you can keep it secret. So by default, they're all public, but you can keep them private, which is really, really nice. So if you want to just work on something behind the scenes, you can do a private one. It's kind of like having a private gist from GitHub or a public gist from GitHub. Same thing, but for a full-on bit of code. Anyway, that's kind of my workflow. I'm pretty interested to hear about what your workflow is, how you work, any of the tools you use. And if you do want to contribute back, you know, leave a comment in the comments box or leave a review. Ping me on Twitter at CodaCatchUp. If that's all I really got to say about workflows, I hope people share, and I'll catch you on the next episode.